Here's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst. I'm sure you've seen the tweets about Brian Burke causing a bit of a stir out there. The Saddle Dome, how does it rank in terms of buildings you like calling games in?
It's not terrible. I mean, there was some of the rinks that have been replaced were far worse than the Saddle Dome is. But it's time. I mean, you know, the rink is, what, 30, it's almost 40 years old, right?
Yeah. Well, Ray, compare, I mean, you've been in Edmonton's rink. Compare Edmonton to Calgary right now.
Oh, now it's not even close. But yeah, when we were going to, you know, Rexall place, it was like, my God, Rexall is like a dirty old closet. Like, I hated that. That's just like you got dirty going in there.
It was so gritty.
And so now, I mean, so now that here's the thing about this. So Calgary needs a new rink. So there's different proposals to do different things. It's almost like the Islanders guy when Charles Wong owned the team. He basically wanted to build a city within the city or within the county of Nassau. And he couldn't get funding for it. If he would have just built the rink, they would have got it. They would have gone ahead and they would have built the rink. But he didn't want to do that. He had this grander project. In Calgary, they're talking about this field house and renovating McMahon Stadium and building the rink right down on the water. Oh, yeah, by the way, the land there is, it's all, I don't know if it's rail yards or what, but the soil's contaminated. It's going to cost tens of millions of dollars to clean that up. Well, the Flames are saying, well, city, you've got to clean that up. And the city's like, we're not cleaning that up. You want to build the rink there, you clean it up. And so it gets into this tug of war. I mean, everybody knows they need a new rink, just nobody wants to pay for it. The one in Vegas works perfectly because they're adding a tax to pay for the stadium, but it's all on the hotel rooms. They're adding $1.50 or something or other to your hotel bill. Hell, none of us know what the bill is when we go to Vegas anyway. What's another $1.50? The difference is you do it in the city, and it goes on to homeowners. And they're like, well, wait a minute, our schools need a new roof, or, you know, whatever, this subway or transit needs to be improved, and we're building a rink? Like, you know, that's where the fight has really started to dig in.
Well, and you can make the argument on both sides, because Calgary, and Burke was saying this today to the group of people he was speaking with, that Edmonton has benefited from the new rink and everything that comes with it. In Ottawa, they're going to benefit, Winnipeg, whatever, which I'm sure is true. But the counter would be, your owner makes a lot of money off us already because we pump the money into the system, and your owner's worth billions of dollars. He could pay for it on his own, but don't use the threat because it's an empty threat. The Flames aren't going anywhere,
right?
But all you're doing is using it as a scare tactic. It's not going to scare the city. I don't believe for a second Burke is saying this because he thinks the mayor of Calgary all of a sudden is going to freak out. He wants Flames fans to freak out so that they force the mayor to give the money up.
It sounds like they got the wrong mayor to deal with there, by
exactly.
the way.
Big time. He's not interested in it.
And I get where, you know, where they're saying, like, where they really lose, you know, of course they'd like to build, like, in Edmonton they have those, what do they call them, noodles, where they're down low and you can eat and watch the game. It's like little sweet, sort of.
Yeah.
The revenue they were pulling in through there was amazing. Well, Calgary doesn't have that. They also can't get the bigger concerts because the roof doesn't support the stages and the lights and the speakers that the big concerts have. So they can't go there. So they're like, well, wait a minute, we lose out on all of that too, and now we're losing all that to Edmonton, because I'm sure an act would like to come in and play both places, but they can't because they can't hang the stuff from the roof; it's going to fall in. So that's another problem they have. I get the issue, and it's nothing that a few $100 million wouldn't solve, but in today's climate, who's got that? Who's got an extra $200-$400 million to build a hockey rink?
I agree.
Not many people.
Ray, what do you make of the 2-day break in the finals? I kind of hate it. You kind of lose steam, and I guess I just would like a hockey game on TV, but I hate the 2-day break. Like, it's in June now.
It's brutal because you know, not just that, like, we're sitting around doing nothing here, right? So, like, it's game 2 days off, game 2 days off, game 2 days off. That's the last 3 days of this, or three games of this series. Like, if this goes seven games, between game four and game seven, that's 9 days because of the 2 days off. Like, it's too much. And I guess they want it, you know, they want to get the games through onto the weekends when the, you know, when the number of viewers climbs, of course, and I get all that, but, man, it really pulls the starch out of things. I think there should be a two-day break between games two and three. So you play the first two, game, day off, game, 2 days off, so they can the teams travel, they get an extra day to rest and recuperate, and then you come back and you go after game four. I would even say take 2 days off after game four if you need, and then go game, day off, game, day off, game. That's it.
Yeah.
But this is too long for my liking. Anyway.
I agree.
I think there's a part of it, too. They're trying to avoid the NBA Finals. And that.
But how do you know when they play?
Well, if you'll notice, they're not playing on the same night at all. So something happened. Someone got details. Someone got information. I would assume, just based on the pecking order and the ratings and all that, the NBA said, hey, if you want to wait for us, this is when we're playing. And then maybe the NHL said, okay, thank you for the heads up. We'll make sure we play Thursday instead of Wednesday or Friday instead of Saturday, whatever.
Right.
That would be my assumption. But I can see the reasoning behind that, too. It all comes down to TV. I mean, everything is about TV. Everything's right. About dollars and cents. And NBC in the States doesn't want to go up against ABC if LeBron's playing Steph Curry at the same time.
But look at the numbers this year down here. Who would have thought a Pittsburgh-Nashville final would have such great numbers? Like, their NBC, they couldn't be happier with their numbers in this final series. It's I think I just read it's among their highest rated.
Really?
And I don't know. I mean, Pittsburgh's always at the top of the charts. For viewership. Pittsburgh and Buffalo are always kind of very, very high. Those are two great NBC markets. The top markets in the last round were like Nashville, Knoxville. Like, everybody just is bought on board of this Smashville stuff, right? They just love it. And so they've had a really good final.
I wonder what kind of numbers they're doing in Vegas.
Yeah.
Like, with hockey coming there next year, are there people in Vegas who are investing in the game now who've decided, okay, you gave us a franchise, we've been waiting for a long time.
Right.
We'll support the product, or I want to gain some education on the product or whatever.
But what about Nashville? It's like that small market in Tennessee. Do you think Vegas would be a sideshow like Nashville would be if they ever made a run?
Oh, I'm sure they would do it up so huge. It would be crazy. They'd have Cirque du Soleil, you know, jumping all over the
ice.
God,
I hope Nashville and Vegas somehow get to a conference final or something.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
I would assume at some point over the next 100 years, if they're both in the league, it'll probably happen.
Yeah, but it better hurry it up. I only got about 7 or 8 left.
Yeah.
Move it along.
I wouldn't bank on that, but you know what I'm saying? I'd be curious to just find out what the numbers are in Vegas. If it's already showing some proof that, hey, they're a hockey market, or that they're going to show some interest in hockey because the NHL is committed to them. They were the first team to go. I know the NFL is right around the corner, but first league to go was the NHL. They hooked up Vegas with what they were asking for a long, long time.
Who would be singing the anthem? Wayne Newton? Like, think about it.
I don't know.
Maybe they could get that dude that screwed up the CFL anthem so badly.
Yeah, that was in Vegas, wasn't it? Yeah, it was.
It was in Vegas. The guy, he had his tune was like, "Oh, Christmas Tree."
Yeah, it was a Christmas song.
That
was terrible.
That guy sucked.
Yeah, he really did suck.
I'm telling you.
That guy was terrible. Feels like there's some pressure all of a sudden on Phil to kind of break out and carry this team offensively. Like, Malkin had a comment today where he's like, it's time. He's going to score in Game 5. It's time. And now all of a sudden it's just shifted to Phil, and it's on Phil to break out.
Well, I want to ask you, Ray, as being a goal scorer, and there was a comment, I think it was out of Pittsburgh, how they wanted Phil to be less, or to be more selfish and to shoot more. And what I took from that watching the last game was he was almost shooting too much. And I don't like when a guy says to be selfish and shoot more, because a lot of times it's just they cross the blue line. It's just like, oh, I got to put this one on net. Where, like, a goal scorer as gifted as Phil Kessel, they know when to shoot the puck. They know how to score. And the last game, it just seemed like, well, I better get 8 shots on net to make everybody happy.
I thought he overshot last game.
Yeah.
But what's been really weird is, and I don't get it, because if you have this gift like Kessel has, that wrist shot, that release, his shot numbers are so far down this year, I don't quite get it. Last year, they played 24 games in the finals, or to win the cup, rather, and he had 98 shots. And this year, or 97 shots, or yeah, 97, 98 shots. This year, he's got 65 shots. They've played one less game. Like, why does he have 30-plus less shots? And so I'm thinking, well, there's obviously a reason, right? And I keep coming back to Chris Letang. And so, you know, Phil's always dangerous on the rush. He gets out on the wing, and, well, who's going to give him the puck? Pittsburgh's defense is too busy pitching it up in the air and sending it into a skating race. He misses somebody like Letang that makes everybody scared, and they back off, and, you know, he hits them out wide. Or their power play, which has been brutal in this finals, they miss Letang back there. So everybody's got, I mean, they're not going to win if Kessel and Malkin aren't part of the deal here. Malkin he's scored almost 2-1 points at home versus the road in the playoffs. So he's back home, he got 2 goals in the first 2 games, and I didn't even notice him in Nashville except when he was in the penalty box. I mean, he just looked bewildered. Kessel hasn't, you know, I mean, he hasn't even really, really had too many good chances. I remember one in game 3, came down the wing, he shot, Rennie made the save, and then he made that great save on Kunitz on the rebound.
Yep.
That's about it. Can you remember any other? Am I missing any?
No, I don't think so.
Well, I've seen a lot of commentary and tweets about missing Letang all of a sudden. It's 2-2 in the Cup Final. And now we're going to bring Letang into it? Like, I don't deny what you're saying, right? Clearly, he would have played a big factor in it, but that just seems like a bit convenient. Okay, you can only score twice on the road, so now, hey, well, they're missing Letang. They didn't miss him when they beat Washington.
Game 7 without Letang. You beat Ottawa without
Columbus,
Letang.
Columbus, who had 100.
You don't think? Well, I think they miss Letang more than almost any other player out of their lineup. Because last year when they won the Cup, he played 29 minutes.
He was awesome.
Like, he was remarkable what he did last year. And, you know, so somehow, I still don't know how they beat Wash with that defense. I still look at those 6 names back there, and I'm like, really? They won?
Yeah.
Like it's a credit to them that they've been able to kind of, what is it, band-aid or patchwork their way around that blue line. But, man, they miss him. They've missed him. It's just like saying
Nashville's missing Johansson, right?
Right.
I mean, it's the same thing.
Do you not think Philip Forsberg misses him? Series is 2-2, but they still miss him. He doesn't have a goal. You can still, yeah, they miss him. They need those guys to be in the lineup. Guess what? They're not. So who's going to do the best job filling in the hole? That's kind of, I guess you can say it's convenient, but it's also factual.
Well, it is. I'm not denying the importance of Letang. I'm just saying that there's enough data already to suggest they can win without him. They've won.
Right.
They've won 14 games without him. They're two
okay,
away
but
from
yeah,
the cup.
So you get here. That's why it's right. So good. You won 14 games. If you don't win the next 2, it doesn't matter that you won 14.
True, but if they don't win the next 2, is it because they didn't have Letang? Is what I'm
no,
saying.
No, I mean the fact is he's not here. What part of the story will be is if they don't generate any more offense, why are they not generating any more offense? Is it because Brian Rossville's top 4 were on the ice every time Crosby and Malkin were there and they couldn't find a way around that? Or is it because their power play sucks so bad and they miss Letang? Like, it could be a combination of all of it, but the one that stands out to me is that their special teams are getting murdered in this series, and you know, one of their most key guys isn't here. And so they got through Washington. They got through Columbus, right? They you know, they won their way here. Maybe here is the tipping point where, guess what, they really could use them. I don't know, not an excuse, just is.
Yeah, well, there's an interesting piece up on, I think, TSN's Twitter page and Instagram, asking people to vote on the best championship duos of the 21st century. And Crosby and Malkin are clearly one of them. Taves and Kane, Sakic and Forsberg, Pronger and Niedermeyer. There's an eight-pack that they have put up, all of which feature great, great players. Obviously, we know if Pittsburgh wins, it will continue to be Sid and Gino. If Nashville wins, who will we consider their dynamic duo, taking goalies out of it because there's no other goalies included in this? Who are the two guys, defenseman and forward, that will be known as like the duo that led them to this cup?
Josi and Forsberg?
No, but Forsberg doesn't have any goals.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, he's had a good...
I would say people would think Josi and Subban.
I think so, too. I think that's probably what it will be historically. I think if Johansson was healthy and kept playing, it may have been Johansson and either Subban or Josi, but I think probably the two defensemen.
I mean, they've gotten goals in this series from just about everybody. I mean, when Frederick Goodrow's got three, and you know, Matthias Ekholm scored three goals during the regular season, he's got one. You know, he's got more goals than Kessel in the finals. So, you know, they got a goal. Arvidsson hadn't scored in 16 games. He gets a goal. They just, you can almost go, Craig Smith hadn't scored in forever. He's got a goal. You know, like it's like they're getting enough. Well, they got enough in two games to give themselves a chance to win here. And it feels like Nashville has a lot of the momentum. But they haven't played very well on the road. They're 5-5 on the road in the playoffs and 9-1 at home. And if that continues, then they lose, right? Because if they stay 500 on the road, they win. That means they'll win once in Pittsburgh. They got to win one here. We know that. Rene hasn't played well here because he got shelled the last time, the last two games he was here. His 8 goals on 36 shots or whatever it was. So now they got to find, whether it's game 5 or game 7, that's assuming they win game 6.
Right.
But it's as much as they've been in control most of the series, they still got to get one here.
Well, let's go around the table here quickly. I'll list off these 8 duos, championship duos of the 21st century. You guys tell me who you would have first. Sid and Malkin, Taves and Kane, Chara and Bergeron, Kopitar and Doughty, Datsyuk and Lidstrom, Pronger and Niedermeyer, Sakic and Forsberg, Marty St. Louis and Vinny LeCavalier.
It's obviously Taze and Kane. Some of those. Who even did that?
I wouldn't say it's obvious it's Taze and Kane.
Well, you're going to say Niedermeyer and Pronger? They won one cup. LeCavalier and St. Louis, they won one cup.
Yeah, they
Why are they
eighth.
Even on there?
Okay.
They finish eighth in the thing.
Huh?
Yeah.
They finish eighth in the list.
Yeah, Vinny and St. Louis would definitely be eighth. There's no doubt about that. But I would put Sid Malkin one, personally. I mean...
No, I have Taves and Kane. They won the most.
I would have Taves and Kane, and then I would have...
Well, how come
Eric
Staal and Justin Williams aren't in there as a dynamic?
Because they're not up to this caliber. We're talking about all Hall of Famers.
So they won a cup.
Well, Kopitar and Doughty have won two.
They won two.
Right. And I'll bet you if Pronger and Niedermeyer spent more than a season together,
they didn't.
Okay, that's great. But talking about it in the moment when they actually won the cup.
It's Taze and Kane.
Well, I thought,
who's your answer?
I just said Sid and Malkin would be one.
I think Pronger and Niedermeyer dominated that playoff. They were ridiculous, but it was just one. I think recency bias, you look at Sid and Malkin, they've been amazing, but Taves and Kane have had the most success, and Doughty and Kopitar have had a ton. It's a tougher list than you think because...
Okay, take the cups out of it.
Did you make that list?
No. Tia, send it. Take the cups out of it. Who would you take if you were starting a team? Which duo would you take? Put
at
it that
the very
way.
Peak of their career?
Yes.
Niedermeyer and Pronger.
Yeah.
Because now you've got half the game covered with each of them.
Right.
Like, Scott Niedermeyer, I think, could be one of the greatest players who ever played the game, ever. Like, hockey was too easy. The guy retired early because he was bored of hockey.
He, I don't know, maybe him or Lidstrom, I'm not sure which guy, pissed me off more to play a game.
It's Lidstrom all day long.
Man, they never, like, would you look like you were sweating or trying or something? Niedermeyer, like, do you remember the goal in the Cup final? I forget who the...
against Detroit, where did he...
Who he dropped his stick, somebody, Sean Burr handed it to him. And all of a sudden, he was like a rocket out of the zone, and boom, he slowed down when he scored. They're like, stop. Pat Flatley said on the bench one night, we were in New Jersey, and he goes, he's not even trying. Because he went back, he got the puck, and he just kind of went behind the net, and he was like gone. And you're like, that's just wrong.
I went for dinner at his house one time, and... you wouldn't have known this guy had played hockey. Like, there's no trophies, no nothing. Like, nothing to do with hockey at that house. He's a family guy. He's got four kids. His wife's a terrific person. They're just the nicest people in the world. And it's just, like, hockey was...
I think the one year in the finals, you know how they show the cars all pulling up? Guys were in Lamborghinis. This guy pulled up in, like, some...
A Prius.
Smart, yeah,
a Prius. Yeah, he's an environmentalist. Like...
he pulled out and plugged it in.
They're such a great family. I'm a big fan of the Niedermeyers, but it's
and,
just...
and then the other guy was Lidstrom. You're going down the boards. You got the puck. And then all of a sudden you don't. Like, he didn't even really check you. But now they're going the other way. And you're like, I don't even really know what happened. Poked it off your stick. One little two-foot pass. And poof, off they go.
Ray, one year in the finals, I think it was Detroit's last cup. Lidstrom was out there and the guy and the thing, the TV goes... they're in the finals, and Nick Lidstrom has zero hits in the playoffs this year. And he was just unbelievable. Like, he was dominating. No hits.
Zero hits.
That duo would be high on my list, man.
Yeah,
he was really
sick,
high.
Man.
I think Orr's the best defenseman. I got Lidstrom, too. And Datsyuk in his prime, 97 points, best two-way guy in the league. It'd be real high.
Yeah.
Real high. Anyway. Have fun down there, buddy. We'll tee up Game 5 tomorrow. Finally, it is upon us tomorrow night.
Yeah, I got a scram here. We're going to U2.
All right, buddy.
Go.
Enjoy yourself.
Later.
There's Ray Ferraro.